what? Doing this brought me to that realization faster, though.
Yeah, I'm not against you. I mean, I'm just trying to save your time.
As I was doing it, I thought, I maybe only have an hour or so or two into actually documenting this stuff, so it wasn't like it was a big effort of time, but I was...
It's good to know what's on top. I don't mean to shut that down. It's just primarily it's about seeing, which means more than half of your work, believe it or not, is away from the guitar with this stuff.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
your hands can already do it. Uh-huh. It's just about seeing the stuff.
Yeah. There were a couple new shapes in here for me to deal with, some double stop things, you know. But, and I did everything on the bottom set of four, too.
Oh, okay.
As well, just because it seemed kind of... you know, necessary.
If you're going to do all three, then I might as well do the programs that have left.
So anyway, I've been working on this stuff. And it's cool. I like it. It's actually much like this analysis that I did on minor six chords when I was trying to understand where the heck these things come from. Minor six chords.
Where do they come from?
Yeah.
Take a minor 7, flat 3, flat 7.
But it's not a diatonic chord.
Sure it is.
A minor 6th chord.
There are diatonic 6th chords in life. They just don't get talked about in music schools too much, but they're there.
Well, yeah, you can take it from a particular scale, but you don't... They don't seem to be as common, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. They're not used as often in music. You see
not anymore. At one time, they were huge staples.
Yeah.
The time of Brahms, Chopin, they were big chords. In the time of George Gershwin, they were huge. I mean, that's Gershwin's favorite minor chord.
Minor
summertime, it isn't right.
Yeah, this
year
one.
If you go, this isn't summertime.
So I had done this analysis. I don't know if I showed you this before, but this was a few months ago that I did that, and that's V2. I realize. Close set.
Close. Okay, now there is such a thing as close harmony.
Close.
That's voicing group number one in the setup of the 14 voicing groups. Right. So they're not really close, okay? You don't want to... It's only on guitar that they look close because they're adjacent.
I got that from Van Epp's book. He calls it a closed set if it's an unbroken string set.
So he's talking about harmony, closed set.
Set of strings, right. Which is what V2 seems to be from...
That's the normal thing. We can occasionally, spread it apart.
Okay, I haven't really gotten into that yet.
Don't even think about it till you need it.
Yeah.
It'll come up. You say, gee, how do I get that? Oh, I'll see. Uh-huh. I mean, you'll just automatically, you're pretty good at fellowship.
Well, I've used it, like on, say, Funny Valentine.
V2 with a split.
That would be...
Let's try it, double. Let's say you did this.
That's true.
That's a major 7 V2 chord.
Okay. Major 7 V2. Yeah. Right.
The split strings now.
Right.
Again, I probably mentioned before, they're the sounds of nature, but they're how they appear on guitar in their various forms, right?
Right.
They're the fingerings. The fingerings refer to, I hope I keep trying to use the words distinctly, forms and fingerings. This is a different form than that. When I say try a different fingering, though, that might be this form now again with a different finger. There are all kinds of fingerings, of course, but this is a different form of the same chord.
Right.
So you'll know what I mean is when I use the two terms.
I guess I'm not real clear yet on why we've established that exists in nature separate from the way we communicated on the guitar.
Oh, okay. Let's say we have no musical instrument yet. You and I fly in from Venus, and we observe the beauty of tone on the earth, and we have intelligent minds, and we figure out that there are patterns and such, and after a while we see that there are major 7 chords, for instance. Or we hear people talking about it, and we pick up on it. And we write down on music paper all the permutations we could possibly think of. Then we look for organizational groupings to make it make sense. We will get, for instance, on the staff, try this one, G on the second line up, C above that, E above that. We're still in the staff, right? Mm-hmm. And B up outside of the staff. Mm-hmm. That looks like, I mean, that sounds like on a guitar. On piano, that's an octave.
Yeah.
Then we come to the guitar. One day we're cruising over this field, and there's a guy down there with this thing. We don't know what it is, but we find it. It's a guitar. And we see him doing this wild study like this. He's doing all kinds of, you know, he's trying millions of ways to get that same sound that we were just...
Right.
So there's the sound itself,
okay.
How it sounds in the air, and then writing it on the staff, that's all one thing. That's the abstraction. Before, it's not really abstract, but I mean, it hasn't come to life on an instrument yet.
Right.
Then there's putting it on your instrument in different forms, and then there are the fingerings applied to any of those forms at a given moment, mm-hmm. depending on what's coming up or what just happened. You choose different fingerings, yes?
That was the tail end of the lesson last time. I don't know if you remember. We discussed it a little bit. And
is this any clearer now, or is there still a foggy spot after what
I mean, that...
Ask me a question if you need to. Think it through, because I don't want you to be foggy at all about it.
V1 would be the straight stack of thirds.
That's correct.
And I think in the haste of wrapping the lesson up last time, when we got into this analysis a little bit, I think you might have used a term that you didn't intend to use.
Okay, what was that?
Because you said the next, we want to get the next smallest, or the next largest.
Let's call it the next largest.
The next largest combination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, next largest would do the job.
And I'm fogging out. So that's where I'm hung up, I guess, in the analysis of that. I mean, I can understand that. This. But
those are all one thing. In terms of analysis, we don't treat them separately as far as on the staff.
Right.
I mean, we would notate them fingering wise differently, but the notes, we're just talking purely the notes at first.
G, C, E, and B.
The reason that's number two is I found it very advantageous. It took me years, man. I hope this will save you all that effort in organizing it. I don't know why I didn't do it at first. My mind was just too foggy, I guess. And I did. At first, I was just overjoyed, and I would just try millions of things, and I just, wow, there's this candy store, and
mm-hmm.
finally I would get it into groups, but even then I didn't really see the order of how to number them, how to think in my head about them for a while, and then finally it got to be think from the bottom up, organize it all from, like, you know, it's small and it gets larger,
right.
But I abandoned that because so much of music is more about what we hear in the melody. The melody is more primal than bass. Bass generates harmony, but if I said sing that back, so it's more important that we have instant harmonization and instant ability to harmonize over a bass line, although
uh-huh.
both of us need some of that skill if we're backing singers. But the other one's even more important.
Uh-huh. So if we're thinking about the bottom, if we start out in root position with a V1,
right.
Then the next largest possibility, I know we're putting a G there instead
the
of there.
We're
moving the G.
is quite simple, see?
But the next tone would be...
It can't be B, because that'll give us a double.
Thing. A double.
And when you double, let's say we call this C major 7, right?
Okay.
Because it could be if a bass player plays C.
Yeah.
But when we go to invert this to find the next form, okay, 7 will come to 1.
Right.
3 will go to 5.
Right.
5 will go to 7. 7 will go to 1. Now we have this form. Okay, we're still in good shape. This is a nice sound. These are hybrid things, by the way, doubles. We have two roots. You saw I started here,
okay,
right?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, now when we take that up, we're going to get the following voice in 3-7-1-3. That'll look like this. These are all good.
Okay.
Now here's the big disappointment. The next one is going to be 3-5.
Mm-hmm.
7-1, 1-3, 3-5. So we don't get major sevens in every stop. I mean, it's not a huge disappointment, but it's just like you don't get really the color that you're after at every station.
Oh, that's interesting. By doubling you. Yeah, okay.
Because each time we had the, like here we had 7, 1, 3.
Right.
And then now we're on 2, 5. It's just that the inside voices have finally put us in a position where there's no 7 anymore.
Uh-huh.
Because we were constantly leaving out one note. This one had no root. This one had no third. This one had no fifth. This one has no 7.
Right. And that brings you back to those important tones in a chord. 3s and 7s are important to communicate the quality of the chord.
Right. I mean, if we started this at 8 years old, I would tell people to work on every hybrid at the same time and everything, because, you know, why not? But life thing is time. You don't have 10 hours a day to practice, so we might as well get the stuff that's most usable first, and then later, if there's extra time, we'll get the other.
Right. Right.
So I kind of dispense with all the double sets at first. I don't even call those voicing groups of inversions, because you don't get inversions of the same.
Right.
So B is not our next largest bass note, nor, of course, is B flat or A or A flat. G is our next.
Yeah.
Now, the reason that ends up, you could still say, well, how do we know it's going to be this chord? Maybe there's some other great chord lurking in there. It's quite simple. We have 7 and 5. We need to put 1 and 3 inside of that, yes? The only place that we can put 1 is on this string, on that string, and of course we could do it an octave higher, but this note is higher in pitch than that, so this is out.
Right.
It's either going to be here or here. Now, even if we could finger, let's say we do that. Let's just suppose we had long fingers, because we're still after sound first. Maybe it'd be a hip sound up here, it'd be easy. You know?
Mm-hmm.
We still need a 3. Now, that means the 3 is going to be only available on this string. So now we certainly need to, both of us acknowledge that that doesn't, it's not practical, so we reverse it. We put 1 here and 3 there, which is where our normal instincts would have put them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
On the staff, the simple explanation would be there's only one place to draw.
Mm-hmm.
You put G here and B here, where are you going to? There's only one C in between that.
Yeah, right.
So that's what this is. I stress in nature, I don't mean that I make it this way. We're just observers. This is the next form.
Yeah.
Now, the next forms, when we ever get to V3, you'll see there are 2 options. Get down to your next place, more than 2.
Well, since we're on this path of
V2 is good path.
Reasoning, if I've found this or this, say in a 1 string set, the next logical thing to do would be to go down to the next tone.
That's correct. Now, once you've done that, look at the options. That's good. That's an option. Is there anything else? I mean, staying right there.
I could grab this G.
That's V3, and the one you played prior is V4.
This is V4 because it's a broken set, or?
No, because it sounds, let me say this clearly.
There's a tone in between.
V1 is the cluster sound, right? That gives it sounds like this.
Right.
It sounds all packed in.
Now, is that close harmony?
Close harmony.
Okay.
It's a cluster, close harmony, 4-way close. Third stacks, V1.
Okay.
Same.
Okay. Beautiful sounds too.
Yes. Right. So say we're playing. This is V1. Okay. This has a real packed in sound. Here's A flat major, 7 and V3, 7 in the bass. See how it still has some of that V1 influence, that cluster in there?
Right.
Okay, here's the same thing in what I'm calling V4. There's no cluster influence. It's like 3 tones hanging around here and a bass note. When you hear, like this is V4, there's no cluster aspect to it, but something like this. I heard that chord and didn't know this stuff first, I would say, ooh, nice cluster chord, you know?
Uh-huh.
I would assume it was one of these.
Right.
But it's not. The bottom 2 tones are clustered, the next 2 are not. It's an illusion that it all sounds clustered up.
Huh.
So V3 produces some clustery sounds. V4 has virtually none. The clusters come in the top, like this kind of thing. I wouldn't hear that as a
cluster. It's a second interval that creates that.
That's right. And when you have seconds at the top of the chord, they're not as potent as when they're in the bottom. Feel their weight more.
Right.
So, because one has a closer sound more often than the other, I've called it a lower number. because the lowest number is the most close sound.
Right.
Wait,
sure.
This is the best anybody's understood me on so far. I tried to explain that before.
So, to get that from where we're starting.
There are many tricks to create V3 from either V1 or let's say V2 as the springboard to everything, because V2 is the one you know the most now.
Right.
You want to create V3, the simplest way is you raise the tenor.
Is that correct?
No, this is not correct.
You want V3 out of this?
Now, we have to go backwards. That's a shame. Lower the alto and octave and you get V3.
See, I'm here, so I'm going to be here.
That's right.
There's a gap between
between.
Now, is this always going to be the case between the alto and the soprano?
Yeah, it's
and
a big gap.
But there's also a gap between the tenor and the alto.
That's correct. It's not the same. It doesn't feel like it's as much of a magnitude for the simple psychological reason that we see it on an adjacent string.
Right.
This looks like, you know.
Right.
We could hold it like this on an adjacent string sometimes too, but there's no need. Right now there's no need.
Yeah.
V3 has some gems, some real gems, and quite a few unwieldy fellows too for the hands. This is fine. There's no problem with this.
Mm-hmm.
There are some ones that are kind of tough. Just so tough.
I ripped a nail in moving my shop. I realized how much I've grown to depend on for the tone. I've halfway debated trimming the rest down to zero just to balance things out.
So I had two numbers, 6433132 and the 9853055.
Oh, that was that old work number.
So
those
are
both defunct, right?
Okay. Are there still two numbers?
No, just one number.
Okay, wait 1 second, please. Phone number is?
Same area codes.
Uh-huh.
650-6281.
6281. Thank you.
Does Van Epps get into this at all?
It's not his way. His way is string sets.
Yeah.
He did so much groundbreaking work. You know, I want to be properly. I want to use the correct propriety of this. Isaac Newton is considered, you know, one of the all-time geniuses in the world. None of us will probably ever be Isaac Newton. I certainly have no pretenses to that. But I like his quote. It says, if I have seen farther than others, it's because I've stood on the shoulders of giants. He built upon his predecessor's work. I'm not claiming genius to have done something that George didn't do, because he was busy laying the work that I would have still had to do to get to where I would even think about
sure,
that.
Sure.
That's why, you know, and the next generation will...
That's how it works.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm glad to understand.
Did you actually study with him?
Oh, sure.
Yeah?
God, yes. It was one of the thrills of my life.
How much time did you spend with him?
Well, time felt different back in 1972, I must say. You know, it was only 8 weeks, but boy, it sure seemed like eight. I mean, I don't mean like it from the interim, gee, when will this end, but it seems like I knew him so much longer than that 8 weeks. You know?
Time is strange. It's bendable that way, isn't it?
Yeah, it lasted longer in those days.
Yeah. Well, I think in any period of your life when you're extremely focused and digging deep, time almost stands still, or it doesn't have the same kind of, it rushes by in one sense, but in another it seems to stand still.
It's interesting.
This summer has been kind of like that for me, getting back into playing after so much time away from the guitar.
it's been a joy, you know.
I'm glad for you.
Yeah.
I can tell it's good for you.
Oh yeah, it definitely is.
You
You know, I bought a little pitch pipe, and
oh, yeah?
I've been working with the ear training. And
how's that coming along?
It's interesting, along the same lines of it's an interesting process going on. I find that I'm getting more in touch with certain rhythms in myself, independent of music. I find that
life type things.
If I'm tense, or if I've been running around, racing around, and I grab my pitch pipe, I'm sharp. I don't hit my note. I find my voice is rising.
Wow.
Whereas if in the morning when I'm relaxed, I've just, awakened, maybe take a shower.
May I write something up here while we're
sure.
talking? Can I use color?
Yeah, sure. I'll come awfully close, if not hit it right on, oftentimes. I'm using A, fifth string open, two A's below middle C. It seems to be about my comfortable bottom note. I can go a little lower. It's a little stretch for me, so I kind of head for bottom in my voice,
it's good enough to do.
It's going to be down there somewhere. I'm having trouble hitting chromatic notes, and I'm having trouble
singing chromatic scales.
I'm having trouble hearing a flat nine, above that note, and different things like that. And if I listen to the radio, I'll find do or one in the tune, I'll turn it off, and I'll try to get my reference pitch, and I get sucked into that pitch, and I forget what my pitch was, even though I know. If I go,
what's a rock and roll song that you adore? It's a rock, guitar-oriented rock and roll song that you really loved when it came out.
Gosh, probably something by the Beatles.
Did you like Day Tripper?
Oh, yeah.
Did you like Ticket to Ride?
Yeah, sure.
Ticket to Ride, I believe, is an A.
Yeah.
Just think of the sound of Ticket to Ride, because it's in your subconscious from
sure.
50 to 100 hearings or whatever in that key.
Or done.
Okay, that's a great one.
That
will do it too. Yeah, I used D, I think I told you last time.
Yeah.
But A is wonderful. A is a great note for guitar players to hook on to.
So it's been interesting.
You ever seen the movie Adventures of Don Juan from the late 40s?
I think so, yeah.
It's got a magnificent love theme in it. It's a great score. You'd be delighted by the score. Wonderful music. Not a bad movie either. A lot of tongue-in-cheek stuff. And, the love thing comes in only in two or three spots. And it's in the key of A, man. And I can't think of it sounding any better than it does when it comes in. So you might just watch that. It might just cement A in more cells. When I hear that thing, it's just so beautiful.
That's great. Yeah. So that's an ongoing activity too.
You mentioned George Van Epps. Tell me your what you know about George. Have you seen George play, or do you have records?
I've never
read
seen
about
him.
What is your exposure to George?
I have a little bit of recorded music on a jazz guitar collection. I've heard him on the radio a couple of times, and I have a friend who had several Van Epps records, and I listened to a few records.
Have any of his books?
I've got his books. I've got three of his books. I've got the two big spiral bound ones.
And the little yellow one?
And the little one that has the...
There's a third big spiral bound one, too. There are three volumes of the big ones.
I think I had seen that one before. When I went in to get these, they didn't have it, so I just bought one and two in the big spiral. And I've just kind of dug into them here and there, not really. I've read about triads and things lately in there. And I've also read about him in various, guitar player articles. Or different.
Did you read that cover story when it came out in 81?
Saw
so
that back there.
So you know about him. That's wonderful.
Yeah. He does Honeysuckle Rose on this one recording I've got. It's like a history of jazz guitar, two records set. He does a beautiful job, seventh string.
I think I've got that somewhere. It's kind of a beigey color.
Yeah.
I listen to that.
It starts with Eddie Lang and those guys back there, and goes all the way up to Mahavishnu.
What a change.
Yeah. In one century.
So
half of one century.
You're pretty friendly with the chords that you've already undertaken
here? The minor six stuff I haven't worked on too much. It was just a beginning analysis, and then I got this stuff from you, and I kind of have let this go on the back burner, so I couldn't necessarily grab them in a hurry. I had some, I think it was on a separate page, some thinking like I had done on that one sheet I showed you, a sheet about analysis. It seems to be used as a two chord quite a bit in music that I found.
Which chord is that?
A minor six chord.
Yeah, it's diatonic in the major scale as a two, but I don't see too many two minor sixes. Those are usually five dominant chords in disguise.
In disguise, with a fifth and bass.
You know what the most common degree is, and it's been consistent for a few hundred years? Four.
Four, yeah, like in Georgia.
Yeah, that's
right,
that's
there. Yeah, that's a four minor six. But isn't that also acting a four minor six? Isn't that acting like a two half diminished two?
It is. It's just that two half diminished.
Because it came from two minor.
A lot of those
to
really
two
come,
half diminished.
See, a lot of them don't really come from two minor. They come from four major. Check out the changes.
That was from six.
Just like chromatic, or even without the chromatic, just semi-chromatic.
That's
like.
Nice, yeah.
Here's a more classical version of it. You hold and then it's minor on the four, you know, and then minor six is just a richer four minor.
Four major to four minor is very common.
That's right. That's
to three, six, two.
Yeah, surely it is a two half diminished too. Actually, there is one strong root that it has affinity to, and that's flat seven dominant. In the last 20, 30, 40 years of jazz, that's taken on a lot more prominence. Where we used to hear a lot of four minor sixes, we might hear flat seven dominant either after the four minor or in front of it, or no, not in front, after or instead of.
Yeah. That's actually in the sheet music to Georgia on the last turnaround.
Another use of that flat. Yeah,
that's
that's great. When you hear Lucy in the Sky, remember that thing?
Yeah.
That's an A too, by the way, for your
pitch.
Yeah. Maybe it's an A flat, you know that? I think it's A though. Right there, that's if you were backing up a singer right there. This, whenever you hear a major seven in the melody, you can't play on the four minor. When you have that major seven, you can't play a four minor seven as comfortably because of the clash of the flat seven and the major seven.
Right.
Even if it's only momentary, the ear picks up that it's not as preferred.
Uh-huh.
But if you always try to say, well, that's a major seven, I'll play a minor major seven, you're just doubling the melody, and that's kind of a bleak sound to get two major sevens and have the singer's major seven and yours. So a richer alternative is the minor six chord, which supports the singer's major seven.
Uh-huh.
They're good friends, those two chords. Those two tones in minor.
Yeah. That's a cool sound.
Yeah, very mysterious.
Yeah.
Minor 6-9, that's even more mysterious. Those support major seven tones very well. This
minor
was on your sheet there on the bottom before you wrote.
Yeah. Oh yeah, those are hip. I've been doing that one.
It's good. You got the what tone on top?
The 11 on top. Yeah.
Yeah. So this tone is real good friends with you. But if we try to play minor 9 and do that, we just there's a little.
Yeah. Right. Right.
It's just a general rule. You see a minor major 7. Playing backup chords or getting rich sound underneath it, that's where you get to use your minor sixes.
Yeah.
Many places to use minor sixes. Yeah, they're really very useful.
Yeah, I really hear it when I think about summertime. I can lock that sound in a hurry.
Do you have a Gershwin songbook?
I have a lot of fake books, and I have most all of Gershwin stuff in, you know, between them. But there's a good one. Charlie just picked up a really nice, actually hardcover book. I guess all Gershwin's tunes are in it, and some biographical.
Those books have the verses, the original thing that was called the verse, those front end parts.
Yeah.
A lot of those
yeah.
have minor six chords and stuff
yeah.
too.
That's
like
cool.
The first time I got rhythm was a real dark minor thing before it breaks into the end. So how many hours a day do you think you're getting in on our stuff? I know you do other work too, like an
probably
hour a day, 2 hours a day?
Easily two, maybe 3 or 4 hours a day.
Right. So that's consistent with all that. So you could take on more material today.
Yeah, I say so. I've also been interested in this sound, like say in D.
You know the whole row of those? You're
yeah.
Calling those from the third string root or from the implied fourth string root?
Implied fourth string root.
So
the ninth is substituting
okay.
for the root in the bass.
That's great. That's a good one.
That's a cool sound. And then into these. Yeah, I'm getting there. I don't have the top string set as well ingrained yet, but I think I could get there.
Let's try this phrasing, okay? To go, it's kind of a thing. Just skipping every other one. Let whatever come out.
That's cool.
Can you try one of those where you do every other one so I can see what friendly you are with these things? Same ones you were doing, the middle four set.
So you were going...
I'm just staying on the middle four.
The middle four.
And I started up pretty
up
high,
higher.
And I was skipping every other degree as I was coming down, phrasing it in modern jazz. You're singing pretty well, that's nice.
Yeah.
Okay, $64,000 question. What do you call these things? I mean, we know they're fourth chords, but individually, at each station, what do you call them, critters?
Well, it's diatonic to the key of D.
In other words,
so I'm creating.
What chord? What's the name of this chord?
Oh, I
what's
see.
The name of that? Are you seeing bass notes and just remembering the shapes over the given bass notes?
Right now, yeah.
Okay.
That's
that'll
why
work.
I brought it up because I wanted to see what kind of thinking you'd recommend on that. But
I spent a lot of time from the bass note myself.
Yeah.
I couldn't live with the actual name sometimes, so I would just say it's the shape because this doesn't sound like a D anything. It sounds like G Lydian waiting to resolve. Some of them very much sound like what we could call from the bass. That's fine.
E minor 11, F sharp minor 11.
This one sounds more like a 1 to me, but I can live with it as F sharp.
Yeah.
This one sounds like a 5.
Yeah.
This one sounds like a 5.
Yeah, very much so.
This sounds like 1 again. This sounds like part of a 5. The next one.
Yeah.
This sounds like 2 or 4 again. When you get high enough, here's a miracle. I don't know what it is. All of them are 5 when you're high enough.
Yeah.
Everyone is 5.
Huh.
Like if you play A11, right? Just you hold them. Okay, I'm playing. Let's say play 8-9. It's here because one of them clashed there. That's mildly clashing, but not real severe.
And back.
When we get down to this one, I would say it's time to hear it as 1. It feels like...
Yeah.
I have some material, a lot of material on this stuff.
I like that a lot. I mentioned too, I got that Schofield video. Technique
he
video.
Plays a lot.
He's into fourths, and this is what got me thinking about it. And he does E's. That stuff is so cool, and it's real accessible. You know, it's not. I mean, for me at this point, I've been having some kind of plateau in a way, trying to break through, thinking about modal tunes, you know?
Tunes that stay in one scale, the chords are all generated by one scale.
Yeah, you know, like that tune, So What?
Yeah, Dorian, uh-huh.
You know, that type of thing.
Right.
Trying to get lines out of that and not just end up, you know, weird stuff, you know, listening to some Miles Davis stuff with Coltrane and things. And I mean, you know, it may be one chord, but the guy's, it's like he's playing changes, you know, over the whole thing. And that, to me, that starts to seem like maybe there's something in there with these fourths.
We're gonna have fun, I promise.
We already are.
Let's start with this one. I think I should talk to you about this before I put the paper down.
Emily was in town last week. Did you see her?
We talked many times, but my schedule has not permitted me to do things like that. Did you?
No. It's working.
If you take these chords that we were talking about, and you omit the second string, so we're just dealing with string five for just the moment anyway, 5, 4, and 3. Mm-hmm. And you're cruising along, I'm in the key of E flat.
E flat.
Okay, I'm looking at you and you're in a different key.
You've got it this way. We want to come in front of the bass. That's the idea.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay, let's stop here. Let's just do this sound of... Okay, once again, please. Do you hear the 5-1-ness of it?
Yeah.
Okay, now come from behind the prior one. Right, with or without the second string now, it's up to you. Let's see if you can feel the 5-1-ness of this too. It's not clashing with a 5. It can work for the 5. It's a little miracle hiding in the scale that the very strong 1 influenced fourth chord, the one that really, as soon as the bass player hits it, you feel how Japanese 1-like it is.
You just have your bottom string.
To E flat, sure, right. And so I'm playing my 5th still on the fret that would give me the 5th, but if I'm thinking B flat 11, for instance, I would put the finger on the 7th fret bass note. That's not. When it's a kind of just a phenomenon. Miracle that the 5 is in front of the 1 and behind the 1 in this game. I've heard jazz piano players use stuff like that from either direction. You know.
Yeah.
And then also, right in front, either way, both sides. Soprano?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So this page does a lot with that concept. It just keeps changing what tone's on top.
So there, it's this whole thing of fourths, and that would be like a...
What we're doing, we're thinking about functional diatonic fourths as opposed to free diatonic fourths.
Yeah.
There's going to be some material on free. And this is a little bit free, this next page. So on this paper it shows, it actually gives you some preliminaries. It starts you like this, it just goes, and just with 3 notes into 4, and 3 notes into 4. And it's good in your head to hear that bum, bum,
yeah.
Bum, bum. Can you sing a low E flat?
This one.
Do you sing?
No, I can't get to that.
Okay. You can just go bom, bom, bom. If and when your voice starts getting deeper in life, if it may, it may not, then try also bom, bom, bom.
Try to get you can hit that low.
Bom.
Well, yeah.
It's no feat, it's just nature's way. If you eat enough ice cream as a kid, your voice drops when you're old. So, on diagram number...
Charlie Niles, I'll never be.
Oh, yeah. What we start doing as a number four here, circle exercise number four, is we start lining up from the melody, from behind, from in front. What I mean is... Number five is... We start extending the melody.
I like these sounds so much. It's like this stuff. Those things.
They have their
what
own
is
world.
It about those sounds? That
they have a tough edge,
a
powerful sound.
No third, that's probably why. Because this is add twos, add fours, this type of thing.
I haven't given you material on those two things. Do you want to work on V2 on your own rather than give you sheets, would you be more comfortable just
it's inevitable that I'm going to be doing that. Yeah, okay. I think now that I've bitten off a chunk of that.
Then what you'll do is you'll ask me when you need help on it.
Yeah.
And we'll just leave it on the side rather than me just giving you material.
Do you think it's appropriate to get into material on V3?
Anything you like.
Yeah, I'd like to check it out.
Sure. Just take what you know and drop the alto with. Is that what we noticed? Yeah, let's see. You drop the alto and octave.
Right, that was that.
Do not expect them to be as workable. It's not your fault. It's just that way.
Yeah. It's funny, though. I find that if I assimilate information that seems beyond or outside of what I would consider usable playing every night, it helps back in the area where I am comfortable. It seems to push that area that I am comfortable forward a little bit. It's kind of like, I don't know, drawing what I consider my comfort zone forward.
Well, that's one.
You know, by just
all the more reason
chewing on stuff that, yeah, I guess that's just the process.
Start getting into the extensions in V2. Consult with me and let me save you time with some material as far as how to, above the regular seventh type chords that you're working with now. And
okay. Broken string sets, you mean extensions?
No, I mean say you start working out major nines and add nines and stuff like that.
That was another thing that I wanted to ask you about, yeah, because you've got to decide whether you're going to drop the root or the fifth, right? If you're going to keep it a four note chord. Is that considered a four-note triad? That seems a strange term to use.
Why do you say four-note triad?
Well,
I'm criticizing. I just don't understand.
I've heard that term used, and I'm trying to understand.
Four-note triad is what we got when we did the
doubling.
Yeah, doubling.
Oh, that's doubling.
That's four.
Okay. So what do you call a four-note chord? Isn't there a shorter term?
There are funny signs, some guys say dyad and triad and quad, I guess some of them might say quadad or something. Huh. I'm happy to just say V1, V2, it's easy for me.
Yeah.
I'm working on my V2, which is size.
Is anybody going to know that, though?
No, not at all.
That's good. So.
I just hope someday to standardize it a taste, even for other instruments. That's my biggest pretension of any claim to a having any larger sphere than provinciality, because it's sensible to organize things, and it's sad that it's not organized.
Well,
it can be organized.
It seems that you're well on the way to that.
I mean, saying to keyboard player, everybody, why don't we talk, because they have their terms drop two, this stuff where they drop a voice. They call this, if they lower this voice an octave, they sensibly refer to that as drop two. That's nice, it's easy to say.
Why two, though, drop?
Well, it's the second, they call this voice one, two, three, and four, so they'll call this drop two. It's just that out of the 14 voice interviews on guitar, some of them have like drop two, two octaves, and drop three, one octave, so you'd have to say drop two square, and drop three.
So there's a V14?
Uh-huh.
My goodness, I better get V3 from you today then.
Okay, I'll just give you one.
I'm not getting any younger.
Luckily, the most important ones for playing with bands at first for you will be V2 for a long time, in that they are the most facile on guitar. Mm-hmm. There's nothing even close. V4 has a lot of hand friendliness. V3 is not that friendly to the hand in a lot of the forms. You'll see. I mean, I'll give you the paper and you'll work with
it. Yeah, I'd like to definitely get that.
Okay, let me start a new section on the gear with these fourth chords.
Been just experimenting with combining the V2 sixths and sevenths, alternating them sometimes.
You'll work with this paper and remember that it's all 5-1. Everything is 5-1.
Okay.
This paper is dealing with the material that you played when you sat down. The ones that you said, gee, I really like this, I'm working on these.
Yeah.
The difference here is only in the texture. That's the only difference. Like this says, key of D flat. I put the fret numbers where the visual roots are. On this paper, I watched the top down. When you work with three-note fourth chords, let's say key of C to make it easy. A lot of the usefulness of fourth chords would fall in the domain of harmonization, where you hear a melody in your head and you harmonize underneath it. That means it behooves us to spend some time at least watching from the top down. So like in three-note fourth chords in particular, it's hard to get the feel that that lowest tone is really a strong root if we were to name it. And since that's a secondary factor in this. Coupling that with the idea that we do want to have the harmonization filled and facilitated. If you hear this melody, if you see the board strong enough, you see your tonal intervals in a key, then you just put those on. You don't have to have functional names.
Right, right.
But you see them from the top down.
Uh-huh.
So that's what these four-note fourth chords are here, too. That's good. So, it's good to know it both ways, you know, and on this paper you're given little exercises. You remember that the X's come after the dots, right? Okay, so we have, I'm in the key of D flat, and you still hold the lower body of it, you put the next dot on here, then the X's, so it's like that, so
sure.
It's just to get that kind of texture. It's kind of a floating rubato thing, or it can be like, jazz piano players kind of question and answer with this stuff, as opposed to always just playing little blocks on every time they hit them.
So that's very similar to a sound I've been doing just in, you know, solo playing with it.
Exactly. Have you tried starting those on the am by chance? Rhythmically offsetting them, start them on the am part of the
A beat. Little bit, maybe, yeah.
Are you feeling it on the end?
Something like that.
I know how to work with that. This we talked about in the last thing. V3. Seven fundamental qualities. Take your time. Go slowly. Don't expect miracles. If you find a few gems that you really love and you don't like the others quite as much, that's fair. There'll be so many chords in your life at some point that it's not like a cardinal rule that you, well, if you know one, you must work always with all the others.
Sure. Yeah, I find that's true. I find I lean toward these sounds. You know, I really like that texture in V2 a lot. It's got that, Lenny Bro talks about an elusive quality. It's dissonant and yet not at the same time. Like these he does.
I'm gonna be finicky with you, and you'll probably not get mad at me because you're a nice guy. You didn't mean the texture of that chord. You meant the mood it creates. Texture, musical texture, is about the density of things, which voices are in motion. Okay. Are we playing blocks? That's what when they study the nine main areas of music in this Western world. One of them is texture. Everything could be said to have its own texture. If we weren't musicians, we might use the word texture for, ooh, I love the texture of that chord, it makes me. But we're going to have to use the word texture so we don't confuse each other in the future. Like, I was referring to this as this is a different texture than block texture. Texture is the fabric of linear motion. That's what texture is about in music. Contrapuntal texture is different than homophonic texture. Okay. That's how they use that term in the schools and stuff.
Okay.
I won't get bent out of shape.
Use the term color.
Color. Now that fits. Okay. I love the color of that.
The color.
Yes. The feeling, the sound. You know, the register.
If I went.
That's a different texture on the same chord.
And this would be block texture.
That's great. Okay. Just so we don't confuse each other.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay, Kim, should we be thinking about setting up another time at this point?
I think so.
Okay.
By all means.
Is 4 weeks still a good interval for us?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, we'll do it at the same time, 12 noon.